On today's podcast, we talk about the road we've traveled, and we're doing it with a slight twist. We figure, if you're listening to us, you've done some research and have a pretty good idea what we genre illustrators do and why. So we brought two artists onto the podcast with a fresh perspective. The first is Dorian Vallejo. Dorian is an accomplished portrait artist, teacher, painter, and I'm honored to call him a friend. You might recognize the name, as he is the son of genre painting legend Boris Vallejo. The second guest is Chloe Coburn, a visionary abstract painter from New York. We had a really great time digging into these topics together, so sit back and enjoy. This is podcast number 5 for Drawn Today, and the topic of today's podcast is the road traveled, or the road less traveled, depending on which side of the road you're on. We are going to be discussing the spectrum from abstract art to representational art, from full-time to part-time. We've got a number of people on the podcast. We're not necessarily talking about what art is, because that's a very, very broad topic, but really why people chose the art that they like to, that they do, why people do the art that they do, and everything around that. So we have a spectrum of players tonight, as I said, and we'll just have people go around and say their names and give their URLs. And we'll start with Blaze.
Awesome. I am Blaze Schwaller. You can find me at spiritgallerytattoo.com.
And Mark.
Hi, I'm Mark Harchar, and you can find me at my website is harchart.com, harchart.com.
And Dorian.
Okay, so I have two websites. My first website is for my portraits, and that's Dorian's with an S, portraits.com. And my second website is for my drawings, and that is drawingsfromlife.com.
Chloe?
My name is Chloe Coburn, and my website is myname.com, which is CHLOECOCKBURN.com.
Hey, Aaron, why don't you say your name and your URL?
Aaron at aaronbmiller.com.
Great. And this is Mark Sheff. You can find me at markscheff.com, markscheff.com. So let's begin. Let's start with Chloe. Chloe is the abstract artist of the group. Chloe, how did you come to do the art that you do? What drew you to abstract art?
I first began doing abstract art in college. I took an abstract art painting class. I was lucky enough, I had a professional painter from New York who was my instructor, whose work I still really like. Actually, I like the memory of it. I can't remember his full name anymore, which is unfortunate. But I had done some, I should say, that was my first real abstract painting class, which I define it as non-representational art, where you're really making colors and shapes that are themselves, and you're not abstracting so much from the world. Earlier on, I had been, you know, had in art classes, you paint, you know, the sort of cubist type thing. You start from, say, a still life and abstract from it. That is, make it look a little bit weird and not what it is, but you're definitely drawing from life.
So you were working and you studied representational art.
Yeah. But this is, I mean, in college, I was, you know, studying art, but I mean, just taking all the classes that someone normally takes. But I took this abstract painting class and I just loved it. I loved the idea of getting down to the real basics of form and color. And I found that abstract artists were the ones that were inspiring me the most, like Malevich's Red Square, I find to be an incredibly stunning and beautiful painting, much more so than any representational paintings. And then when I look to representational paintings, like the masters, say, you know, Rembrandt or Sargent or something, the things that I'm attracted to in those paintings are what I would call the abstract elements of structure, composition, light, and form, and so on. So to me, as soon as I started doing it, it just seemed like the right kind of thing for me. Like, you know, painting still lifes and models, just I didn't find interesting. It just seemed like they all look the same, and I wasn't inspired. But abstractly, I seemed to be able to generate new ideas and make paintings that were totally my own and work with elements that I found exciting.
Chloe, do you find that working abstract makes you much more conscious of the texture of the material that you're working with, like the thickness of paint?
I'm definitely very conscious of that. I don't know if I'm more conscious than I would be otherwise, because I don't paint representational paintings. But that's a big part of it. And one of my inspirations is Gerhard Richter, who has a lot of texture on the surface of his paintings. And Anselm Kiefer, too, is another one who has a lot of texture. The Germans, they dig texture. Yes. And that's a great, that's a very exciting element. I mean, not too much, not like, you know, sculptural texture on a painting.
This is Mark. I was speaking with an abstract or non-representational artist that I go to a life drawing class with, and we got into a discussion in which he made a comment along the lines of, you're either a color person or a line person. and that kind of made me take a step back and think about it, because we were discussing a friend of his pieces that was a non-representational, and it had basically blocks of color and you know, different patterns and things. And it really made me think that that in some ways true for me, because I would have to say that I'm more of a line person than a color-based person. How do you feel about that statement, Chloe?
Well, I definitely am more of a color person than a line person. So in our two-person survey, it matches up extremely well with whether you make abstract or representational art. Yeah, I don't know if... I think there are probably different modalities. You know, I don't know if you're essentially one or the other. I have in the past used a lot of stripes in my paintings. I don't know if those count as lines or long, colorful rectangles. But if you're, you know, the sort of thinking about describing a shape by describing its edges and contours through line is definitely something that's foreign to me. So wow. I'm thinking about the bodies of the shapes, and that may, and that's what you do with color. So that makes sense as a sort of rough distinction.
This is Mark Sheff. And I think that, you know, another way of looking at that question, Mark, another way of answering that question is that we're all really doing both. I think the best representational art, in my view, is art that really, really kind of doesn't have lines. It treats lines as simply places where two shapes meet. And I know there's a lot of painters who, you know, who work like this. You know, when I was studying with Max Ginsburg for a week, thanks to Dorian sending me the invitation, I learned from him, he doesn't use lines. He doesn't draw the figure and then sort of fill it in. He basically works the form. So he starts, and when you start the portraits with him, it starts in a very almost abstract way. It doesn't look like anything. And then you start to pull the representation out of it. So I think, you know, are you one or the other? I think you can be both.
Yeah, I would agree. This is Dorian, and I would definitely agree with you, Mark. I would say even if for some of the artists that you would generally consider to be very linear, and certainly Max would probably consider them linear, somebody like, say, Alphonse Mucha, clearly, like, his lines, you know, reveal, like, the form and a feeling of, like, a total shape, just in, within the line itself.
Okay, this is Blaze. I'm coming at it from a different angle from you guys because I'm doing tattoos. When you start with that, you have to know exactly where you're going to begin with in a much more definite way, I think, than you do when you're starting an abstract painting or even when I'm starting a more representational painting. So I find that the line has become more important and less important as I'm learning. And right now I need to have lines to define edges in a way that I feel that paintings don't necessarily need because of the way that skin kind of, it ages, it separates, it just changes over time. And without a line to edge something, it's much more prone to bleeding out. So it's a process.
So Blaze, let me ask you, your end product as a tattoo artist is line. Is that, I mean, that's more or less?
No, I don't think so. I'm going for an image, but when you place something on the skin and it's just there, for many years, I was getting away from the lines because I paint and I wanted my tattoos to look more like paintings. Mm-hmm. And as I'm progressing and learning and talking with other tattoo artists, I'm finding that to make it a really solid piece over time, I really need to go in with a liner and tighten up edges, even if it's in just a slightly darker color, but the same color along that edge, and it lets it hold a lot better. So I'm much more conscious of line now than I was even a year ago.
So there's a question that we have from Mark, actually, who emailed me this earlier, asking about whether abstraction is a foundation for realism or vice versa. And we're sort of talking about right now, people have different end products and bring in things like line and form along the way. Do people use abstraction in their work for the representational artists? And Chloe, you know, on the flip side, do you use representation as any sort of inspiration for your work? Why don't we start with someone on the representational side? Anyone?
I'll jump in again. This is Blaise. When I went to college, actually, I was an abstract artist. So I would say, yeah, I have them heavily influence each other, but I've leaned much more towards representation. And I use the color and compositional skills that I really learned and tried to get better in abstract to make my paintings read better. And the same with the tattoos, to just understand how a color is going to make a shape change form.
Yeah, I would probably say that there's the best representational painters have a really good, solid understanding of what's going on in the abstract representation of the rectangle. I mean, it's basically we're dealing with an abstract rectangle or square or some kind of shape to place our image in. And so when you break down your image, if it doesn't have strong abstract qualities to begin with, it doesn't matter how well it's drawn or rendered, it's just going to be kind of weak.
I can say that's absolutely true. Chloe and I are actually married, so she is constantly over my shoulder giving me great feedback. And there's so many times when I think I have the most beautifully drawn, you name it, just that you've ever seen. And, you know, she'll come up and go, but it's not working. Because she can see from a very different perspective, from an abstract perspective, the piece in a way that I don't always catch.
Yeah, I'd have to jump in and say that I was just actually shortly before this looking at Chloe's website. It's all really, really consistent and all very, very strong. It's just a pleasure looking through it all. I'm looking at that stuff and thinking, like, I want to see the originals. Or
you're welcome to come by the studio anytime.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to, I have a couple of thoughts going on in my head. This is Chloe. Dorian, I'm looking at your website. That was me making the typing noise. So I was looking at people's websites. And trying to think about, I want to distinguish two things. Like, a representational piece needs strong composition and form, which are abstract elements in order to make it work. But that's different. That's not the sum of what an abstract painting is made up of. There's something more there. So that's one thought. And the other thought is that looking at your paintings, each of them could be a beautiful drawing. Like if you just, and I assume each one was, had a of your portraits, you probably did a fully rendered sketch, you know, preparatory drawing of what you were going to do, and then you painted it. And it's not like you filled in the drawing. You definitely execute it. You execute your portraits in paint using paint in a painterly way, rather than just using it in service of, you know, elaborate pencil or something. But there's like, I don't think, like, I couldn't do a sketch of my paintings. It wouldn't look like anything. Like
you know what? Actually, here, I'll interject for a second, because in a lot of ways, actually, I don't do a drawing before I start. In a lot of ways, my paintings, when I first start, look somewhat like your paintings. They're very, very abstract. They're so, they're just like, if you would just take the shape and take the finished piece and blur it out, like if you could blur it out in Photoshop or just pixelate it so it's no longer representational, that's how I pretty much start. It's a shape, like a light shape, say for the face if it's light skin, and a dark shape for the hair and or the clothing, or and how these basic shapes, like you were saying, the composition, the very basics of composition and form start out as abstract principles. And so, go ahead, what were you going to say?
Do you find your composition as you go, or do you have a plan?
No, I don't. There's a part of it that starts out very kind of organically, but like when I'm looking at the subject, it reveals itself, like from life especially. Like there's a breakup of light and shade that happens, and those type of things, when you squint your eyes, reveal like the those very basic ideas of composition of form and light and shade and these abstract principles that you can use.
That's a great, you just mentioned the squinting of the eyes. Chloe actually makes fun of me all the, cause I'm constantly squinting my eyes, but it is a great way. It's what a lot of us representational artists use as a way to see the abstract piece. If we're working from life, or even if, you know, if we've painted up sort of a color study or a value study of a piece, we want to see if it's working, step back, squint our eyes, and take a look at the abstract or the piece in the abstract to really understand if it's working.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And even when we were like studying, that's how a lot of our instructors would mm-hmm. teach us, like, to begin with, like, you'd break things into three separate values. And if your composition didn't work in three separate values, like a light, a medium, and a dark, and even better if it worked in two values, if it was strong enough and it could read just as silhouettes, like comic book artists would do this, like your panels have to read and your storytelling has to read simply in silhouettes, black and white, two different shapes. And if it doesn't, then it's just no good. Like all the rendering and all the detail in the world is just not going to add to it.
Yeah. I have to tell you a story at this point. In college, I was working on my thesis of these big paintings, these big stripes, and my uncle came to visit from California. And I brought him in to look at the work, and I said, "What do you think?" And I was really excited to get his impression. And he said, he wasn't very impressed. He was sort of like, "Oh, you know, they seem okay." And I was like pretty down about it. And then I learned that he's totally colorblind. So he was seeing just the values or whatever it is a colorblind person sees. But for him, you know, I guess I didn't have any high contrast, like line, you know, even if, so he would see just, you know, lines on other lines. And, that's but so the thing that's making the painting activate is the fact that this line has a little bit of green in it. And this piece has a little bit of red in it. And even though they're not obviously red and green, they vibrate.
Yeah.
Because they have enough of that color in them to set each other off. And so that's an element that's like outside of that. That's a very different way of structuring relationships in the painting, because it's not just about the blocky shape. It's about the color, becoming activated by other colors. And as you all know, like a red in one painting, you have the exact same red in the other painting, it would do something totally different depending on its context. So that's like a different layer, you know, that anyone working in paint is working, is aware of color and needs to understand it. But that's what I'm making work for me a lot more of the time than I think the representational artists, because my paintings are about that relationship.
Oh, you know what? But a lot of the representational artists, the better ones, do the same thing. If you go looking through the Sargent book, he's doing the same thing. In fact, like when we get together, like I'll show it to you and you'll have like a whole new appreciation for his brilliance. Like his paintings, he actually was a musician. So when you look in his paintings and in particular, like his landscapes and that kind of thing, it's almost like when you can see what he's doing, it's all abstract. And so he'll have large like sweeps of color. And quiet like areas with tiny little details, or he'll place a red and a green, or everything will be basically green with a tiny little highlight of red, or you know, in some of the portraits, this big open field of like dark with this light little like sharp angle, and it's not just Sargent, it's actually and it's like the better you get as a representational like painter, you realize it's more about, it's more than an accumulation of details. It's actually, the very basics of like what you do in like it's all connected. It's not, they're not two separate entities like abstract and representational. They're actually two sides of the same coin.
That actually leads into a question that I had asked Mark Sheff a few days ago about the difference between the non-representational artist and the representational artist. We're talking about how a number of these representational artists will have this firm, abstracted foundation to their work, yet they then choose or decide or what have you to take that that abstract form and composition and push it towards the representational side. And I know for myself, in some cases in work that I'm doing, I start off with this amorphous type of set of values and shapes and things. And it kind of likens me to back when I was a kid and I would just stare up at the sky, and everyone's probably done this. You know, look at clouds and see if you can see shapes and things that, you know, your imagination is making them into, you know, you're seeing a duck or an elephant or whatever it is. I would think that any representational artist that would start in that abstracted fashion, you know, starts to see those representations, you know, from their imagination in these abstractions. Yet someone like you, Chloe, who your work kind of, you know, stays at that non-representational point, do you ever work on a piece where you are looking at it and you're seeing something in it that is representational, yet you decide not to push it in that direction? Or is that just not how your brain functions? I'm not really sure I'm asking this the right way, but
I think, first of all, none of my paintings are representational in any way. I'm not trying to represent my feelings or represent anything. Like, to me, the color, it's about relationships between the colors and the forms that are happening on the canvas. And as I work up a painting, I'm watching these relationships evolve and seeing tensions and dynamics and trying to cultivate the ones that seem to me to be exciting. So that aside, every now and then there will suddenly something looks to me like, you know, a desert, or I have one painting called Tower, actually, which is, you know, it's the representation. My nod to representation is just in the title. There's a vague sort of towery shape that could be a tower in a deep, deep fog, or could not be, but every one in 20 paintings will evoke a representational image to me. But it's not that, that's sort of an after-the-fact imposition on the thing that I created. I don't see it happening and then try to pull it forward more, because I'm not called. I never get the feeling, oh, let's see what would happen if I pushed this and made it more look like a tower. Because to me, then I would be calling upon some kind of concept in my mind and trying to make the painting look like that, and that's when my paintings go bad. I'm trying to get away from my, you know, left brain, in a really extreme way, because if I can keep ahead of it, if I can work fast enough to stay ahead of it, you know, exciting things happen. If it catches up with me and it says, let me look like this or like that, then it falls flat.
That's so interesting. Now, so this is Dorian again. So does that mean then that while you're creating, you wait until you're finished and then name your paintings?
Oh, yeah.
Title your paintings?
Yeah.
Okay, so you sort of look at them and go like, or tower, because like, you know, or tower or something like that.
Right, or most of them are more action or feeling words, like, or nouns, like, what would it be, you know?
Forest dweller,
or crest, or evoke. They're like one-word poems in my head. Sorry, go.
I was just going to ask if you ever try to change, like say you do a painting and, like you said, the tower, and maybe there's an image coming through that could be a tower. Do you ever maybe name it something completely different and try and push it towards a new concept just through the name?
That seems a little aggressive towards the painting. I mean, if it's... if it's the feeling towery, that's fine by me. I don't need to like control it and, you know, and push it in another direction. It's not so obviously towery that I feel like that's going to close down other perceptions of the image. But in titling, I do try and have the title be evocative while also being open-ended. So I'm not controlling someone's experience entirely, while also giving them like a way in. But I feel like it's so funny. I feel like I'm kind of, you guys are like, wow, an abstract painter. Let's ask her lots of questions. She's such a strange creature. I'm curious as to why you all make representational art. You know, why is that interesting to you? Do you think about it as such, or that's just what you do? or is it just what pays?
Ooh, that's a great question. who wants to go first?
I'll go. This is Blaze. I think my jump from abstract into realism was because I wanted to push myself beyond just being in the moment and being able to communicate between colors. If I started a painting and I said, wow, I'm really having an interesting play between red and green, for me it was, how can I push this to challenge myself? Like, can I add another element to it beyond that? And then you just get into this whole hairy craziness of, well, my God, I'm trying to make this look like a face, but I'm really concerned about the color. How can I get this in the shadow? And seriously, my paintings took a huge dive for a really long time, and they're slowly starting to come back up. And actually, a lot of that is through talking with other artists and learning how to make that play work for me. But I think for me, it was about the challenge, and it was about wanting to tell stories and get into illustration more. And that was another reason that I got into tattooing, which was a jump from me wanting to paint for myself. And at that point, I was primarily painting abstract, that I wanted to use the skill that I saw that I had, because I can copy things and that's kind of awesome. And I did want to make money with it, but I also wanted to have a purpose, I guess, to my art. I thought to myself, I'm painting all the time and drawing in my house. I'm not really sharing it with anybody, and what a shame that is. How can I get such joy from this and never have anyone see it? And that one day I just thought that was a pitiful answer to myself, so I went out and took an apprenticeship. And from there, I started learning all these other skills to add into everything else and make even more of a hairy, crazy mess. But it's actually really worked out, and for me, it's the relationships that I form between people, and that I'm able to really hear what other people are saying about what they need. And I find the beauty in being able to make something pretty out of that for them, or something meaningful and beautiful, and be able to communicate it in a way that they can understand. So
is that very strongly connected to the representational nature of what you're making, or that's your evolution as an artist, and before it was abstract, now it's representational, but it's really something else?
Tough question. It's kind of happened organically. I think I'm using the skills from both. I'm preferring more representational, but in the work that I'm choosing, that for me, the tattooing is really meaningful. I put a lot of abstract into it, because when you place something on a 3D form like the body, it's me having to learn how to place it so that it reads well from a distance on all angles. It's me having to wonder, the light's always going to be kind of coming from above in most situations for mm-hmm. people. How is that affecting glare? What's that going to look like? It's taking the play of all of these different aspects of a living, moving, breathing thing and trying to make this little math puzzle in my head. Like, how can color work really well here? This person has really pale skin. What do I need to do to make this light colored tattoo that they want really pop? And sometimes that's about creating an abstract form around it so that their portrait of their dog, for instance, actually comes forward and has a setting.
You know, so, that's another, sorry to interrupt. You can go ahead.
Oh, actually I was petering off. Go ahead.
Okay. That's another interesting aspect of this for me, which is the whole problem solving aspect. I come from a computer science background where I studied in college to be a programmer. And I know a number of people, like I think, you know, Mark, you're a tech person, Aaron, you've done a bunch of tech. I know that from a programming perspective, the real joy was solving problems. You know, there were definitely days when I was down in the Science Center lab and I felt like a freaking cowboy when I figured out how to get the thing done right. You know, it was an amazing feeling that I can't really say why or how it happened, but it was the solving of the problem that made it happen. And it's the same feeling I get when I'm working on a piece and it's like Blaze said, you know, I'm considering everything from who the client is to what I'm representing to the medium that I'm using to how it's going to be displayed to the style that I'm working in or the style that I'm bringing it into. If somebody has something and they want it done the way that I do it. And when these things start to come together, when I'm solving these problems and getting everything to kind of sing together, it's just that feeling that it's getting solved and you're solving it. That is that, I mean, that's more or less the reason why I do art, because that is such a great high. I don't want to stop getting it.
I feel exactly the same way.
For me, the technical side of art became very important to me because I have a very engineering type, mathematical based brain. I always have from the time I was a kid. It's the bits and pieces were more important in general than the overall picture. It was more the path on how to get to the end. And intermixed in that are these bits and pieces of creativity that come in different forms, whether it's just an abstract concept or, you know, color choice or something that kind of starts to poke into this mathematical equation based mind that I have. So for me, the organic, abstracted type of view of art doesn't exactly make sense to me in and of itself without puzzle pieces to put together or to wrap around it.
But Mark, you're still using abstract ideas without necessarily having them codified in your head. I've seen your process and I've seen your work. And like you said, you start with, and as Dorian said, sort of an amorphous kind of blobby thing where you're basically trying to figure out where to put stuff. You might have a clearer idea of a story that you're trying to tell and the players in the story and, you know, where they are and that kind of thing. But even if you know that you're putting a girl and a dragon and a mountaintop in, you know, China or wherever, you start by playing with shapes, playing with values.
You're absolutely right.
But the question is, why do you make representational art, not how are abstract elements important in all of our art, which no one is going to deny.
But why
can paint a gorilla or a snake or a multi-armed monster? I'm looking at your website.
I was trying to say is that all of these pieces are like part of a puzzle, and the representational art for me is the completion of putting the puzzle together. And each one of these pieces in and of itself, while important, until I'm able to put them all together into one piece to complete that puzzle, it doesn't feel right to me. And for me, you know, like you said, Mark, I start with abstraction, yet without getting in detail, shape, line, and an image that is recognizable to me and something that, you know, fits, you know, an image in my brain, even if it's not fully formed. It's just putting pieces together, and representational allows me to more fully develop that the way my brain likes to work through things.
I think
that was you again, Chloe. Go ahead. Because this is your question, so go ahead.
I'll just say one thing that I'm drawing from. Like an abstract painting is also heading, you know, you want to bring it to a point where it's resolved in a way that you could, when you say representational painting, you may know that it's resolved at least in one element because it like you've rendered a hand and it looks hand-like. That's not the end of it, obviously. It doesn't mean you're finished with your representational painting, but that's like some marker of having achieved some resolution. And in an abstract painting, you don't have that marker, but at the same time, there is an unresolved bunch of colors and a resolved bunch of colors. And then, you know, there is a thingness that it achieves when it gets to the right place. It hums together. It's working, or it's working except for that one part, and you just have to, like, mess with it. I mean, that happens in all of our paintings. You know, there's bits that are working and not working, but there's a way, there's a point at which it comes together and is worth looking at and is exciting. And before that paint, it's like colors and shapes, and it's, you know, doesn't amount to much. I just think, you know, that it's a little trickier maybe in abstract art to know when you've arrived because there's no marker of, well, at least it looks like a hand.
Ultimately, we're social creatures. So to answer the question of why do this as representation, well, it's very clear. The reason is because as social creatures, We use like we're using language to communicate, and our ability to express ourselves with language. Like, there's a very clear standard of quality that when somebody speaks and they can articulate like an idea clearly, everyone else can say, "Oh God, that's touched me," and I understand that. And so the answer as to why represent ideas in pictures is because as social creatures, the feelings that we have are best understood by making pictures that are representational. And when they're representational, they can also be, that can also answer the question, because representational art actually has a standard of quality that most people can relate to, and most people can assert like a hierarchy to say, this actually is done well, and this is not done well, and that's much harder. Like when you're saying, when you're talking about abstract art and you're saying, like, I'm working at something and it's working or it's not working, well, that's much more personal on a level. The outside world has very difficult time relating to something Mark was saying, like as a technical side, it's the same thing. He uses puzzle pieces to describe what he's talking about and saying that he has a difficult time understanding things that are organic and abstract. It's because for the majority of people out there, you can't just throw a handful of sand up into the air and expect that they all know what you're talking about.
I want to push back on you in two points. First of all, I'll pose two questions to you. Why is it important to know that something is done well, as you say? Though you say that in representational art, there are standards that people accept, and so they can like better recognize a good representational painting than perhaps a good abstract painting because they're more equipped to understand what those relations are. Why is that an important thing? And the other thing is, this is less a question, but just a challenge. I think that colors and forms can relate to each other in a way and create emotional energy and intensity that engages the viewer at that human social level in the same way as representational stuff. It's obviously not telling an explicit story, but you have paintings that are, you know, about two quiet figures, which are just, you know, shapes on either side of the canvas, and they seem a little lonely. Or lots of action and intensity and things smashing together, and that's really fun, or something like that. I mean, our brains are like built to impose stories on stuff. So even when you just have the most basic fundamental shapes, you know, if done correctly, you can, like in Malevich's red square and black square relating to each other, there's a whole story of the relationship between those two shapes that is not totally disconnected from a painting of two people looking at each other or looking away. So that's my pushback on that.
Aaron, did you have something to add to this?
I've got lots of opinions, tons of them.
Pick one.
Well, I share my studio with an abstract artist. So we talk about this stuff all the time. We talk about it every time he does a painting, every time I do a painting. We bring up... all of these points. We've had these same discussions for the last 2 years now. Well, the thing that happens is that from my point of view that I've discussed with him is that if you're doing an abstract painting, which is why I brought up the question earlier, and if it's an abstract painting, you've decided to leave out the representation. So now the meaning, the story, the narrative, what all of that stuff is now up to me. So I get to decide. You've taken that all out of the equation. So now that's my job. You know, when people talk about, oh, I need a paragraph to understand the painting or the sculpture, that now it's my job. I have to interpret your image based on my life experience. I don't know that other artist's life experience. And since it's abstract, there's no representation to tell me what's going on. So I am filling in my own blanks. And that's what I think happens is people make those judgments, whether it's worth their time, whether they think it's crap, whether they think it's beautiful and it's music to their eyes. It, it's all based on what they've dealt with in the past already, what they're bringing to the table and what they've decided.
So the first question again is about why is the standard of quality important?
Okay. And the reason why the standard of quality is important is because it's all about communication. As social creatures, it's all about communication. And so you can't pull that part of the equation out. Math exists as the kind of creatures that we are. Math exists because, like, so much about our existence is trying to make order out of chaos. And so they're very definite standards of the way our educational system has been set up that's based on math. You know, that we work so hard to define things so, because communication between us is so difficult. Even with things like email, it so easily gets misinterpreted. So that you can articulate an idea to communicate, because when I understand and know that you, when I appreciate and know that you appreciate something like Bach's music, like I've heard another artist like articulate this idea and I thought it was so like beautiful, that appreciation of that music or work of art that comes with it, the ability to connect us, makes it less likely that we'll kill each other. And so much of our like primal existence is based on territorial like things and tribes and objectifying other peoples and other cultures so that we would take over them or kill them. But art actually has the grand power of unifying people,
you know,
without
Dorian,
language. Yeah.
Dorian, you're actually reminding me of, you're making me think about another totally separate topic, which we don't need to get on, but there's a constant pressure between order and chaos in our society. And I think it's a mistake, certainly, to say that representation is order and abstract is chaos. I think that there's, as Chloe points out, lots of abstract artists that are using order in the abstract to communicate whatever they're communicating.
Well, it's not that one's bad and one's good. It's more about and like I said earlier, like a good representational painting will have, we all know that has like powers of has elements of, it has to have these like good elements of like Chloe said of composition that are form and, you know, these are the basic elements, you know, but, it's really about like communicating and trying to unify, like, not like separate, but trying to create something that unifies. You know.
So are you saying that only representational art communicates, and that which is rendered communicates
what
best?
What I'm saying is that most people like will be able to understand your idea if you speak in a language that communicates. So if I started speaking in tongues, if I started speaking in just abstract sounds, well, then nobody on this podcast would understand. You just cut
certainly, but that doesn't mean that it's invalid. I was actually thinking specifically about, I was having a conversation with somebody recently about basically existing in two different planes, and I'll explain what I mean. You know, you're an adult, I'm an adult. If somebody who was 5 years old said, you know, what's it like to be an adult? I could tell them all about it. They wouldn't necessarily get it. They wouldn't feel it. They wouldn't understand it. They won't until they experience it. And for some people, certainly, a great deal of order is beautiful. And for some people, a great deal of order, they understand it and it makes a lot of sense. And perhaps some of these abstract concepts don't. And perhaps there's a communication barrier between those groups of people. But I think you really need to have both. I don't think one can exist without the other. And perhaps this might be trite, but I just think that, you know, it's like you can't have dark without light. You have to have, have both.
But yeah, sir. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, isn't that part of the point that even the name of the style of art abstract leads you to have those complications of communication that what you're communicating is in the abstract? So you're actually then probably not trying to actually communicate because...
I disagree.
I disagree as well.
Well, I guess what you're saying is, you know, that they're trying to communicate, but they're they leave it open to the, like, they don't spell out every detail for the viewer.
So why do you guys disagree?
Okay, I'm going to disagree in this case because I think if you're painting an abstract painting, you are conveying something probably pretty visceral for you, and you're working that painting and it's talking to you until you feel it's finished. And I've been through that process probably a few hundred times as well.
Right, but
I think that what you're trying to communicate is, like, we have to take it to a different thing to compare it from art. So you come up with a new concept, and it's like taking it from what you're feeling in your body and putting it into a thought. It's like when you have something on the tip of your tongue and you can't really describe it, and you're just hoping that by putting it out there, someone will catch it in their brain and go, yes, I get it. But there's no language for it yet.
But what about, do you guys know Pink Floyd and know the track Great Gig in the Sky?
Yes.
It's a woman's vocal. That there's no words. She's just singing passionately. It's an incredibly evocative, emotionative, communicative song, emotional, I meant. And even though there are no words. So it's an abstract piece of music in a way. But she's absolutely telling a story of different, different human experiences without putting it into words. And conversely, sometimes the songs with words, it's not the words that are important. It's the feeling underneath the words.
Let me pose this question to everybody. Is there, if you take two separate concepts here and tell me if there's a difference. If someone were to say 2 + 2 to you, everyone is going to answer 4. Yet if I pose the word or concept love to everyone, everyone on this podcast is going to come up with something different. And those are both concrete concepts, yet one is a definitive way of expressing something, and another one is more, let's call it, emotional. It could mean different things to different people based on different sets of experiences.
Mark,
so
what if it's double instead of 2 + 2? How does that change it? Because you'd still get the same thing. 2 + 2 is 4. But if you say double, so many different interpretations of that can happen the same way with love.
Well, that's true. I mean, you can say double and you can say 2 + 2 and they're going to express different things. I think the
point.
But
are you saying representational art is like math, as so certain and defined? I mean, if you showed your paintings to someone who had never seen a two-dimensional image before, it wouldn't mean anything to them.
What I'm trying to say is representational art has a certain level of expression that is in a way more defined than non-representational. Like Dorian was saying, for those people who process things on a more literal basis, there's been some studies done, just for example, between men and women and how their brains work. Okay. And they've mapped out different parts of the brain to see which ones function for logical processing and parts that function for emotional processing. And they found that when it comes to a difference between men and women, for example, women's brains will always process logic and emotion at the same time, no matter what they're doing in everything. And this is a generality, but in general, this is how it works, where a man's brain has a segregation where he either can process logically, emotionally, or both.
Or neither sometimes, as I'm reminded.
Vegetable! You know what? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish your idea.
I was just going to say, so for, say, those people who maybe only process on a logical basis, you know, maybe a non-representational piece, which is more, evokes more of an emotional response, which, like you were talking, Chloe, about that Pink Floyd song, those people may just not get the same level of communication, like Dorian was saying, from a more emotional based piece than a more logic based piece, which representational tends to be a bit logic more based.
I don't really like separate the two things, but I would say that they're sort of like this, that it's all part of the same thing, and that representational painting is a lot more like something that tells a story. Like we're built to, like she said, our brains are built to like want to hear stories, and so much of it is about communication. And the further along you go from clear representational painting to a little more impressionistic painting, and then towards even less representational painting, and then to just flat out abstract, it's a little more like looking at clouds. Our brains want so much to make order out of this chaos. So we can be looking at clouds, like someone said earlier, and see a duck. You know, that Pink Floyd song or other bits of abstract things strike us in a way that's more like an impression and more like a feeling of something. It's not so much that it's a bad thing. Now, an answer to making money, well, it just so happens that a lot of making money and getting work is about communication and, you know, if you're painting a tattoo or if you're doing an illustration, that's all narrative, like based stuff.
And I think though, Dorian, just to jump in, I think that this is Mark Sheff again.
Yeah.
The reason that I do representational art has nothing to do with money. Like Blaise said, it's, you know, like she was saying, she was doing these drawings anyway, and she basically found a way to sustain it, you know, to do it sustainably. For me, it's the same thing. I was doing computer programming and I decided to take, you know, some art classes on the side because I'd always done art in high school and I was just drawn to it. And so what I had to figure out was how to make money at it because I wanted to do it more. But that wasn't the reason that got me into illustration. I already was called to do representational art.
And I think like what you said earlier on was one of the reasons why you started was because you liked solving like the problem. And in solving the problem, that even that little sentence that like to put that in quotes is very much like I think Mark or Aaron, you know, was saying that that's very much like math, solving the problem.
Yes,
painting is solving a problem.
Sorry,
I feel like I'm problem solving all the time.
I want to respond to that though, because I was thinking about this earlier. For me, you know, there is a problem solving aspect to it, and there is so much about the reason that I do this representation work is because the process fulfills me. Now, am I solving problems? Yes. Is it like math? In some ways, yes, but it's not a formula. Like math. What it is it's really like higher level math where there is no formula and you're exploring. And so for me, you know, I look at lots of representational art all the time, and there is a lot of art to me that looks very stiff. It looks like somebody figured it out. They figured out how to draw a hand and how to draw a head and how to draw a person in whatever kinds of clothes and this whatever kind of environment, and it feels lifeless and it feels stiff. To me, the really successful art is the person who can solve the problems but really bring all these other aspects that we're talking about, the emotion, their process, you know, some sort of feeling, some sort of communication into the work. The example that I think of when I think of somebody who does that very successfully besides, you know, present company is, you know, John Foster. If you look at his work, he's definitely representing figures and science fiction stuff and fantasy stuff and all this stuff, but he's not painting, you know, he's not painting photorealistically. He's exploring and he's using all kinds of crazy colors. He's using colors that you just don't find in nature, but it's representational. It doesn't look real like a photo, but it looks real.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. In fact, I think that was a wonderful summation of the whole thing, that as things get closer to mathematical formulas, formulas work very well in math to get the same result time and time again.
Exactly.
And really exactly. Don't work to in art very well.
You know, I agree.
I think because the vast majority of painters are either painting abstractly or representationally at any given time in their career, there is an oppositional nature to this conversation that's definitely come out today in the podcast. Where it's a sense of, well, we do this and you do that. Well, we're all doing the same thing, but maybe this does it better for this reason, which I find is interesting. That there's a turfiness to it.
Yeah.
You know, and the one painter that I know of that really, really does both is Richter. Mm-hmm. He really paints very realistic representational paintings and fully abstract paintings. And I remember, and that's just so rare. So looking at his work, I find it intriguing. You know, it can't be about he's obviously not committed to this idea that, you know, representational art communicates to the world in the way he wants to, because he spends a lot of his time also painting gigantic abstract paintings. And it can't be for him that abstraction really gets to the core of things better, because he makes representational art. I remember I saw a retrospective of his some time ago, I guess, maybe in San Francisco. And it was that big show that was going around.
Yeah.
And the theme for him, apparently, or one theme that was going across these paintings, was actually a process theme, which was blurring. That his representational paintings were all blurred, and his abstract paintings were also blurred in a way that he basically uses this, like, he has the painting on the wall, and he has this, like, giant vertical, you know, squeegee sponge thing that's on a track, and he can, like, pull it along and, you know, evenly drag paint across the canvas, which is how he applies paint to some of his abstract stuff, and also how he blurs his representational stuff. So that the two sides of him were linked by this sort of way of making, rather than any kind of conceptual commitment to abstraction or representation. I'd be curious to know if he's ever written about it, or if anyone ever has explored that more with him, just given that it's such a rare thing to see it. But I find it intriguing that, you know, for him, it's not all these things that have been talked about. Maybe they might come up in his mind, but he's obviously playing for both teams, so he's not committed to one being better than the other.
You know, and he's one of these people I try to remain silent about, but I wouldn't say that he's playing for one side or the other. I think he's clearly on one side, and in regard to
which side.
Yeah, which side?
I don't even want to comment publicly, you know, but seriously, I don't think like that. The whole thing about turfiness, I honestly don't think that there really is like a one side or the other side. I think it's part of the same. It's part of the same thing.
It certainly is. But you were making comments about how representational art is better for communicating.
I think it communicates to more people in the same way that speaking words that, you know, in a language, we all speak English. If somebody starts speaking in tongues, even if it's passionate, it leaves it open to interpretation.
But words are fully open to interpretation. Mark and I talk to each other all the time. I have no idea what we're saying.
It's true.
Because you're married.
It's true.
I'm thinking that maybe part of the divisiveness of it is that as people, particularly in Western culture, there's a very big sense that not everyone can be winners at the same time. So we feel really invested in our particular form of expression, and we really want to defend it. Not necessarily to take you down, but just to make sure that we're not wrong. I think maybe that's coming out a little bit.
Oh, I don't even know that it was, you know. In fact, if there was anything like any defensiveness here, I'm not sure that it was on any of our part. I feel like from the very beginning that Chloe, you were thinking that everybody was looking at you. I think you called yourself the interpretation was that we were looking at you as a strange creature. And so that the beginning of this whole conversation was, well, why did you choose to do realism? As though really the representational work or realism was any different than what you're doing. It's really not. It's the same thing.
It's interesting that you mentioned that we're sort of getting around to this in the end, because, you know, when we were coming up with the idea for the podcast, I had put it out there to a few people and said, you know, abstract versus realism, representational art. And when I sent it to Chloe, she said, this whole versus thing is made up, basically. You know, this is, you know, I chose to do one kind of art. You chose to do another kind of art. And there's something, and Chloe keeps coming back to this in what she's saying, but there's something more than just the application of color and composition, and for us, the representation of a hand and a head and various things. There's more than that. You know, the end result isn't to make it look like a hand. It's to do something else, and that is where we share a common ground.
I would agree, and I would say, like I said in the beginning, it's about communicating ideas, there's just different levels of communication. That's all, different ways to express ideas. it's not like one's better than the other. They're just different ways of doing the same thing.
I would agree.
I think that's fair. There's certainly not better than the other. I find myself moved by abstract painting much more than by representational painting. And maybe it's because for me, the necessary aspect of rendering and representational painting sometimes gets in the way of what I find to be beautiful and compelling, which is light and color. Even though a beautiful representational painting are using, certainly, skillfully, light and color. When I go to Chelsea or the galleries or museums or things like that and look at the paintings, I'm just drawn to the abstract paintings more. I don't know what it is. It's not because I think they're better. There's just something that's speaking to me and communicating to me in a way that the representational art isn't. And I absolutely, Dorian, what you say is obviously true. More people feel like they can get something out of a representational painting than abstract painting, definitely. Most people, I think, feel like they don't get what abstract art is supposed to be about, in part because of this, like, I don't know. I think it's a historical artifact where abstract art at one point, at least, you know, postured itself as the more sophisticated, conceptual, complicated thing. And people felt excluded from that. And I'm like very anti that. I think, you know, there could be nothing more, open to people than color and form and light, because that's what we are surrounded by in our world. So I, you know, people say, I don't know what to make of it, or I don't know enough about art to, like, look at your work. I think that's very silly. You have eyes. You live in the world.
You know, I have something else, actually, to chime in about, like abstract painting and why the public responds in the way they do. And one of the reasons why is because, in particular, like, in our country, and it's no different anywhere else, the use of abstract art has been more easily, it's just been easy to manipulate the art market with abstract art, because it's left open to interpretation about the quality of it. And there's an element of the emperor's new clothes to that. So I know people actually who couldn't actually make that good of a living as representational painters and went to work for very prominent, businessmen that had turned into fine artists and producing abstract work. So the very skill that was used to produce this representational painting was now put into making an abstract painting for this prominent, we're talking in the millions, like paintings that would sell in the millions, that sell to the Guggenheim in Italy for over $1 million. You're talking about the same type of thing. One is the same artist producing two different pieces, two paintings. One is representational and the market says, sorry, it's just not that good. And one is abstract. And that piece of work has been manipulated by business and by, institutions of authority or that are beholden to business. And so they'll buy that abstract painting because who's to say whether it's good or not? There's no standard. The only person behind that is somebody who's a huge heavy hitter. There's a lot of millions behind that. So it goes into the modern.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you could look at that in a number of ways. I mean, one, you could say everything that you're saying that, you know, that this is, that business is sort of behind this. I mean, on the other hand, you could say, well, there's a couple things. You could say that your friend is better at communicating in the abstract than he is in representation.
It has nothing to do with that.
You could also have a whole other podcast on this topic.
If he had the same painting and put it on the market and it was not, it's not an exercise in quality. It's an exercise in who you know. So the businessman knows the right people. It can get into institutions of authority like the Guggenheim, like the Museum of Modern Art, like the Guggenheim in Italy, like.
Is this, Dorian, is this a commentary on like what's wrong with the art market in general or something you really see as being connected to abstract paintings? Like that happens more with an abstract painting than a representational painting. And why is that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would say that happens more with abstract painting than representational painting.
No doubt. Why? But I'm curious why.
Well,
it's the salespeople. Have you ever read The Tipping Point?
Yeah, no. I understand that. I mean, that's the mechanism we use.
Because, like, because it can be like the emperor's new clothes. Because if you have people that that are the tastemakers, and right, and they have a they're heavy hitters. They have millions of dollars behind them. If you have institutions of authority and they're saying this is quality, then and it's abstract, they're calling the shots. They're not. There's no standard in when people look at something on the wall and they go, I don't quite understand that. They don't say that when they're, you know, when they're, you brought the example of a hand. Nobody will look at a hand and go, that hand is really drawn well. It doesn't matter what anybody's saying. If it's not drawn well, there's the majority of people can look at it. You can pull a truck driver off the street and he'll look at it and go, no, I'm sorry. There's something wrong with that.
But you know,
it just doesn't look right.
I'm going to respectfully disagree. I've seen a lot of what I think is really poorly drawn stuff sell for tons and tons of work. And it's the same mechanism. I don't disagree with you on the market. I think that there's a machine. There's, you know, like you say, there's tastemakers. There's people who have lots of money behind them who are saying this is quality and this isn't quality. I don't agree with their tastes all the time. I mean, I've seen some really poorly drawn stuff on walls selling for ridiculous amounts of money. I think that anybody on this podcast, the abstract artists included, could draw better than some of the stuff I've seen. But you know, somebody said that was valuable. I don't think it has anything to do with abstract or representation in the end. I agree with your commentary on the market. I disagree that it's more in one world than the other. I certainly think that it's easier to insert meaning into an abstract painting, but I think it's just as easy to make an argument for quality, because quality is such an abstract term. It's easy to make that argument for anything.
And also you see representational landscapes, like giant kind of fuzzy impressionistic-y landscapes that are, you know, representational. I feel like those in the gallery sell for huge sums because they like go well with the decorator's plan or something.
I was in a gallery and I saw, just to give one example, I saw a line drawing. It was a horizon line. It was a one-point perspective. Somebody had drawn one point and they had drawn a road, two lines. They had drawn a, you know, a median strip with, you know, two more lines and some dividers. They'd used whatever, you know, form of measurement. And that was it. Sold for six figures. It wasn't abstract. It was a representational piece. It was drawn more or less accurately, but I would argue fairly poorly, six figures. Somebody decided that was valuable.
Well, then I guess it's just a matter of us finding the people that find the work valuable.
No. So if you guys are
maybe
listening,
nice
we've got lots of people here who can draw better than the people that you're representing. And write down our website.
It might have been the frame. It's all about the framing.
Right.
And if you like gorillas with monocles, go to Hartshark.
Is there any sort of last comments that people want to get in for, you know, to get into the podcast?
I'm feeling good about it.
I'm glad we've communicated a feeling of good to you in this podcast. The music from today's podcast is brought to you by Blue Tech. You can find out more about him and his music at bluetechonline.com.